It's Tuesday the 12th of June, and you're listening to an off-season special of the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
Oh, I thought we lost Aaron already. We're back for an off-season special. So we could probably call it an end-of-season special, as we never got round to recording one after the playoffs that I think it was the Devils that won it, Sean.
No way. Surely not.
Nah, Devils never win the playoffs. That's why we didn't record one. We never win the playoffs, so there was no point. So that is what happened and what we missed. It's been talked about. The videos have probably been watched hundreds of times since, so we're not going to go right over old ground, but safe to say it was a very special moment for the three of us. A brilliant weekend all around, thanks to some quite nice calls. We're going to have a look at, though, the squad that we've got announced so far in terms of players re-signed, players and staff departing. Paul will have a little look at some of the other players whose futures are still to be announced and or decided. Before we just look ahead to the start of the new season and have a little discussion around the pre-season schedule that's been put in place for us and obviously the CHL draw that has happened and the teams that we're going to be facing in that and how we think we may fare this season. So getting started, going chronologically, seems to make most sense, starting with Mega Monday. I think just a week or two after playoffs, it was just after the GB tournament, and four players being re-signed. I think the first 3 years probably wasn't really a great deal of surprise with Mark Richardson, Joey Haddad and Joey Martin coming back. But a player that I think a lot of people wanted to see but maybe weren't sure was announced inside Taz costume, Aaron, Matt Pope. And I know that you were pleased to see Pope back in a Devil's shirt for next season.
The guy had an unreal end of the season. You know, he went 9 games consecutively scoring goals. He got us going in the semi-final. I think as soon as he scored that goal, we found our speed and got right into the game. A lot of people think he's a little bit hot and cold, but I was a massive fan of his all season. He put big points up for us, scored some key goals, and yeah, I was chuffed a bit. I didn't know where he was coming from because I wasn't looking at the point, but I think Lodo was describing the player we signed, and they said a big power forward who can score goals, and I was like, Pope. And I missed the old reveal of Matt Pope being inside the Taz costume.
How did you miss it? You were stood next to me.
I was looking at you, not at the stage. being polite, you know, my hands were occupied, so I wasn't looking where I was meant to be, and yeah, I missed the whole charade of it. But I was absolutely over the moon with the signing. I think that is of players I expected to be back. Because I'll be honest, I did expect Hotham to come back, but we'll get that in a second. I think Matt Pope and Tyson Stratton were two players on my list that I would want back 100% next year, and we've got one of them, so let's see how it goes.
We will, and Sean, I said there's not too much to be said for the first three, but you're really important for the Devils to get signed and announced the players in Richardson, Haddad and Martin.
Of course, yeah, you know, Richardson is just part of the furniture, really, isn't he? You know, probably the most irreplaceable player on the roster. Certainly in demand by every club in the league. And the two Joeys, they've been with us for, I think this is going to be their fifth season, correct me if I'm wrong, but Joey Martin's been the best player in the league since he landed in the country. And Joey Haddad gives you that size, that aggressiveness, that speed. It just brings a bit of everything. He's a big game player. Good to see both of them back. Not totally unexpected. I think they're settled. They love it here, as their families and partners and this, that, and the other. So not surprising, but good to get it out of the way and confirm, because they're a massive part of our success the last couple of years and hopefully going forward.
Yeah, so you're a good, solid start to the off-season recruitment, and I think most people probably agreed it was an improvement on the Mega Monday from a couple of seasons before, where a couple of hundred people tried to get in a building on a summer's day with no aircon. It was an interesting one. My timeline has gone a little bit out, but we're going to talk about the departing. Members of this season's team before we move on to the last couple of signings. Some changes off ice, which probably after the first season when Neil Francis stepped down from the bench, probably the first time we've seen any sort of major changes in the playing side of the back office of the Devils. Sean, with both Jamie Elson and Deese, the kit manager, leaving, do you think sort of, I think you're obviously a popular guy in the locker room, and Jamie's now been on the bench, I think, four seasons. I think he stepped up in Lord's first season. So, you know, quite a big change in terms of your personalities and people in and around the club for next season.
Yeah, definitely. Interesting to see what becomes of the bench situation with Jamie Elson departing. Obviously, last year, Luke Piggott took on that role. The season before, you had Jake Morissette there with his injury. So, best wishes to Jamie. He was a massive, he was a proper Cardiff Devil, big fan of the club since since he was young. And I'm sure we'll see him at games and around the rink. And I'm really interested to see where that sort of situation develops and who'll be on the bench with Lord. I'd imagine it means that Lord is going to be full-time coach this year, as we expect, which is good news. So we shall see who ends up on the side with him. I'd imagine Piggott will play a part of it. Deese, what can I say, put everything into the club the last couple of years that he had. Always made sure that the room looked great. You saw a lot of pictures on social media. Good guy. I wish him the best in whatever he goes on to do. And again, we've added to the back office staff or the on ice staff with Mick Kemp from Milton Keynes.
Yeah, someone who's on Twitter and Facebook sort of had good things said about him. He's been involved, I think, with Coventry, Milton Keynes, I think he was with Milton Keynes the last year, and I think he's been involved with the GB setup, but definitely under 20s, if not had some involvement with the seniors as well. So, you know, for whatever reason, for the change, the Devils have signed an experienced replacement for Deese, but I would be very surprised if he was as much of a character, I think, is probably the safest way, not the safest, the best way of putting it. Aaron, for you, obviously Sean mentioned that obviously it looks like Lord's going to be full-time on the bench with Luke Piggott. Do you expect to see anyone else to come in, or do you think with Lord being on the benches, with the Devils are looking to free up a bit more cash on the ice rather than having in effect two full-time and three bench coaches?
Yeah, I don't think it's money saving. I think it's just, Jamie Elson was there to support Lord as a coach when he was playing, and now Lord has hung his skates up. I think that it means that essentially there's no room for Elson anymore. He did wonders for the club, 8 trophies in 4 years, same as Lord, and who knows if we would have won them without Elson or not. But I think, Lord is taking more of a, this is my job role now, and he's the one stepping behind the bench, taking the responsibility. I do think we'll see Luke Piggott there, but I think Luke Piggott will be like he was towards the end of the season, with a space, or he'll be there to support Lord, and if any injuries come about, he can step in. But I don't think we'll see anyone else. But we could, because, Lord, is a forward. Luke Piggott, a forward. So we haven't really got a defensive coach there at the moment. So we could see a defensive coach step in and look after the D, but I think I think for now it's just, I gut feeling it's just going to be Piggott and Lord, and yeah, I'm happy with that reason.
My sort of personal opinion, well, not opinion, but what wouldn't surprise me to see is for Jake Morissette to maybe relinquish the captain's armband and take on an assistant coaching role next year. And I suppose if we are running with a spare import again, it could even be that Morissette could at times take the spare import position and stand on the bench as an assistant coach alongside Lord. And so if you think about it, I know Morissette is obviously going to be on, you would imagine, a bigger contract than Jamie Elson, but if he's also the spare import, so for example, Drew Parris, as he was for the end of the year, if you're replacing the two of those with Morissette, probably looking about equal. And you know, let's be honest, as much as we probably don't want to admit it, we've probably not got that many more seasons of Andrew Lord as our coach. So any succession planning, it'd be Morissette or anyone else who either with the club or comes in. I would like to see us trying to look at that. I mentioned Drew Parris, probably the least surprising departure of any that are going to happen this season. More often than not, it seemed to be Drew that was sitting on the bench. And Aaron didn't really live up to the expectations of when he was first signed and announced, and those initial CHL performances.
You know, he came in full of fitness, full of life, scored a beauty in the CHL that won us that game. I can't remember who it was against, but we won the game.
Davos.
I wasn't there, so forgive me. But yeah, you know, we all expected big things and for him to do bits, and then just after the CHL finished, you know, he took a knock and he seemed not to be right since then, and we tried to fit him in here and there, and he did do some games. You know, when he come back towards the end of the year, he was fantastic, and honestly, I wouldn't have minded who we picked between Lewis and Parris, who was the two up in the air at the time. But you know, sometimes you've got to make tough decisions, and you know, he sat out in the playoff finals weekend, and you know, we were all the better for it. We won the competition. Who knows if we would have won it without him or not? But he was, you know, he took. Where everyone thought we was booing him when we'd done the whole Drew thing, you know, he took it on the shoulders, and he was a great character. Wasn't my cup of tea exactly, but decent hockey player, and I wish him all the best.
Yeah, fully agree with that, and yeah, his performances towards the end of the year, after he got back up to speed after his injury, were I think we saw glimpses of what might have been, potentially without the injury or you know, if there was anything else that held him back through the season. But yeah, he's already found a club, so you know, it's nice to see when players move on that they're able to get into employment quite quickly afterwards. So that's good to see. And yeah, echo Aaron's sentiment. Another loss on the D, and I think we probably say it's, especially for those people who saw him crying on the ice after the last home game, having photos with his partner, probably not such a surprise. But one that
doesn't make it any easier to take.
not at all. And yeah, you know, I would say he's probably the hardest player that we would have to replace. And I would probably say it's the going to be the biggest test of Andrew Lord's coaching career. To replace Andrew Hotham. Sean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I genuinely do. I think it's a bold statement, but I think it's an accurate one as well.
Obviously, Hotham has just been different class. You said Joey Martin's been the best player in the league since day one, since he started. So Andrew Hotham, very similar on defence for you, Sean, and you know, his stats don't lie, but over a point a game, but he brought so much more than that on top of those amazing stats.
Yeah, obviously the stats are unbelievable. Like to go a point a game in pro hockey as a defenseman is pretty good going. But just the way that he did it was unbelievable. You just look at the assists that he racked up. You know, And his point production has gone up almost year on year. You know, 33 assists, 42, 43, 44. 43 again in his four seasons. 18 goals, 12 goals, 10, 18. And not just like, look how clutch some of the goals he scored as well. You know, this year, the league winner in Belfast, the game winning goal in the playoff final, just, and the amount of ice time he logged, just was such a diverse player. Wasn't afraid to scrap, had a couple of scraps. Chippy, you know, loved to chirp guys. You know, you remember in that playoff final last year against Sheffield after Jeff Walker sort of, you know, run his hands along the ice and Andrew Hotham scores a goal to tie the game up and does the same thing. And he just got in the faces of the opposition, under the skin, scored big goals, wasn't afraid to get physical, just brought a bit of everything. And it's hard to say how we're gonna replace that. And players like Andrew Hotham don't just come around every year. They're a special kind of breed, and it's a real shame to see him go. I don't think anyone's surprised, as you said, but to have someone who brings that composure, that calmness on the power play. The guy killed penalties as well. You know, he's been on the kill since he got here. He just overall made the team better. He was just a big game player. Like we said about, you know, we talk about Haddad and Martin being big game players. Andrew Hawson's probably the best big game player we've had in the last 4 years. And we are really going to miss him. Our loss is, you know, it's hard to say whether he's going to play again. But we were lucky to have enjoyed 4 years of Andrew Hawson, and what unbelievable 4 years it was. So, you know, many, many happy memories, and best of luck to him in whatever he goes on to do.
Unless he ends up in Orange.
Then you're talking Tyler Michel levels of hatred, you know. This episode will just be completely bleeped out, this whole segment. I want you to record two edits of it, just in case.
Just in case, we'll replace it out. So I agree with everything you said, and I think sort of, we were lucky to have Hotham for 4 years, and I think he's been clearly too good for the league for that long. I think it's just, we're lucky that he found somewhere we liked that much and settled and brought so much off the ice. Obviously, he was instrumental with getting the Pride Night to Cardiff in the last season, and just so many highlights that you can talk about with him. Aaron, you've sure mentioned it, or we both mentioned it being difficult to replace him. For you, do you almost think we need to look at signing a couple of players to bring everything that Hotham offered? Because, you know, the odds of us finding it in one package are probably pretty slim.
That's the thing, see. We've given, like, luckily, hopefully, Hotham has given the club a bit of time before making his decision. And Andrew Lord is working his absolute nuts off looking for any type of replacement, but Andrew Hotham is irreplaceable. You're never going to get another guy who can play 30 plus minutes a game, put the points up he did. Yeah, he made mistakes and turnover. He was probably one of our highest turnover players there, but he was always willing to take that risk. And, you know, often risk earns in reward. And with Hotham, it was 90% reward, 10% error. And I think You simply just not gonna replace him. What we're gonna have to do, we're probably gonna have to get rid of another D-man or two. One that's gonna be a great power play D-man, and one's gonna be like a great penalty kill D-man, and hopefully they can match up to Andrew Hotham's production with points as well. You know, to get a point in the game D-man for 4 years straight was a testimony to him anyway. To find it again is going to be nigh on impossible. It's just, you're not going to do it. We need to be looking outside the box. You know, we got Fournier. Well, hopefully, touch wood, fingers crossed, we keep Fournier. And, you know, Fournier is a little bit younger, a little bit more inexperienced, loves playing for Card Devils, sometimes does what Andrew Hotham does and grabs the collar of the shirt and pulls the team through it. So hopefully, you know, he's not going to be the next Andrew Hotham. He's going to be the first Gleeson Fournier, and he can do similar things as Hotham done. But my God, Fournier doesn't, like, the way Fournier skates, I don't think he's going to be able to skate for 30 minutes plus a game on penalty kill on the power play. Like, Hotham had some weird genes where he was eating KFC and drinking Pepsi and then playing 30 minutes a game. Like, do you know what I mean? It's
unreal.
The guy was literally superhuman in this league. He was an NHL level, but he was top league Europe level easy, and how we kept him for 4 years is phenomenal. But
I think the KFC and the Pepsi was probably the reason that we kept him for 4 years.
Yeah, probably.
While he's that good, you know, at our level, we'll tolerate it. But you know, if you go to a slightly better league, then it gets clamped down on, and you know, it's the mixture between what you're getting paid, the quality you're playing at, and your lifestyle. And he must have just been that sweet spot for him where he was still one of the best players in the league, and not effortlessly, because he worked his bag off every night. And yeah, so it was something you said in passing about the rate of turnovers. And I've always thought that if everyone played exactly the same number of minutes as Andrew Hotham, or equal minutes, the number of turnovers would probably be the same. You know, he ices in all situations, so you get more turnovers. I know the club don't release stats, but I know there's one of the stats guys on Twitter has sort of been banging on that Hotham has been one of the best stats guys since he's been involved with it. So, you know, it's not just his points. He's just a complete package.
He's the only player I've known, right, to play a full two, like, we're down a goal in the last 2 minutes of a game, last 4 minutes of a game, we're on a penalty kill. He will ice the entire 2 minutes of that penalty kill, and then not even come off the ice. He will stay on that ice and, you know, try his best to get us a turnover. I can remember when we was playing home, I think it was the quarterfinals against Guildford or something like that. It was one of the last games of the year. And Luke Piggott and Andrew Lord were screaming top of their lungs, trying to get Hotham off the ice. He was like, nah, I'm staying. I got this. And he come off and he looked absolutely exhausted. And, you know, everyone thought he didn't have the right attitude when we first signed him. Everyone thought it was just all about Andrew Hotham. But I don't think you would find another team player and the desire to win that Andrew Hotham had in anyone. So how are we going to replace him? Well, we're not. I've said it. It's impossible.
My biggest concern for next season is whoever gets the top line defensive position, whoever that is, that everyone's going to expect him to be Andrew Hotham. And
I'll be one of those people, and I know I will. I don't want to be, but I know I'm going to be. The first mistake he makes, or if we see him on the guy on the power play and he doesn't do the Andrew Hotham fake shot and carry the puck in, I'm going to be like, Andrew Hotham would have done that there. Andrew Hotham would have done this there. Yeah, I'm going to be one of those guys, but that player is going to have a terrible first couple of weeks of the season.
Massive issues. And it's just that hopefully people understand that they just won't do everything. Like, you probably, the grit might have to go up front that you offer that little bit, you know, all of it is. Yeah, I feel quite depressed now after talking about that. On to better news, I think. Let's move on quite quickly. So the next signing announced was Craig Moore coming back. Great to see that, you know, obviously his injuries recovered well enough that the Devils have been able to re-sign him. He got a special award at the end of the season. Jubilee Awards thingy-majigamy, whatever they call it. I think that should be the official name going forward. for the work he did with the special recognition, for the work he did with the club, he threw himself into everything. School visits, sponsorship things, everything. He was, filming the title celebrations. He's done it all. So great to see Craig Moore back. And then we talked about everyone being fully ready to see Andrew Hotham depart. I think quite a few of us were fully prepared to see Ben Bams leave as well, onto bigger and better things in Europe. And it was a very nice surprise on Thursday, maybe, when it was announced that he was returning alongside Tom Murdy. And Sean, as difficult as Andrew Hotham would be to replace as the player, what Ben Bams offers with being the top goalie in the league and not taking an import slot, probably just as difficult to have replaced him if he hadn't come back.
Yeah, we talk about how difficult Andrew Hoffman is to replace, but there's only two goalies in the world, or sorry, two British goalies in the world capable of backstopping a team to a league title, a British team to a league title, and that's Ben Bounce and Jackson Whistle. You know, there's however many offensive defensemen in the world that we have the chance to sign. You know, but we could have another Andrew Hoffman, don't expect us to, but with Ben Bounce, you know, if you don't sign Ben Bounce and you don't get Jackson Whistle, then you've lost out basically. You know, Bouncy has come on, his game has come on so much since he played his first year with us. We thought he was good when he first came to us, and he's grown and grown as a goalie. And you look at what he's achieved with Team GB the last 2 years, two back-to-back gold medals, earning promotion to Pool A, and you really thought that he'd put himself in the spotlight there, and this was going to be the time or his opportunity to make the jump to one of the higher leagues in Europe. And you know, I don't think any of us would have been, you know, we would have been sad to see him go, but I think every single fan would have understood him going and wished him well. But thankfully, we don't have to worry about it for another year. Well, yet. You know, I always say until the guys step out on the ice, then they're not coming back. But Bouncy's elected to come back and stay for another year. And thank God. It's a massive, massive position to fill. Your goalie has to be your best player on every given night. You can single-handedly win you games. If he's not up to a scratch, you are going to lose games. And Bouncy's brought that consistency to us the last 2 years, where import goalies couldn't bring it to us for, you know, the 20 years before we didn't win the title. So, yeah, it's a massive, massive coup for us to keep him. And I just hope we can keep it going.
Yeah, and Aaron, glad to see Bounds back, but Tom Moody back in the supporting role, and they seem to have a bond off the ice, but Moody's filled in admirably the last couple of seasons when called on.
Yeah, I think, you know, Thomas Moody, Mad Dog, last 2 years, you know, you could possibly say we might not have won the league without him. You know, he backstopped us and came in at important times when we needed him, and we won games. He's a key player. He has a great relationship with Bounds, which I think is key as well. You know, I bet they spend most of their time together talking about hockey, playing hockey, practicing, and I bet they're not afraid to give each other pointers. And I think Moody is what we needed for Bounds to, you know, if things were going wrong, Bounds' head drop, Moody could pick him back up, and, you know, he's been instrumental for us, and without him, like I said, especially the first league title, the end of that year, you know, I don't think we would have done it if Bounds was seriously injured and we had a different backup, but Moody's a decent goalie in his own, so we're happy with the pair of them.
I'm pretty sure that the first league title we won, the spell that Bams was out, the number of points we won with Moody and Nett was more than the number of points we won the league by. So, yeah, a lesser goalie that lost all those games, I'm pretty sure. You know, obviously, we may have picked up wins with another goalie, but Moody won us more than the number of points we won the league by. So you're 100% right in that. Obviously, last year was, he still won us a lot of points, but we won the league by a bit more of a margin. So, yeah, but that just emphasises we won the league by quite a number of points. We won the league again, guys.
Did we?
We hadn't mentioned it. We're half hour into our off-season special and we'd only mentioned we're in the playoffs. We've completely forgotten to mention that we won the league back-to-back.
Back-to-back?
So it was back-to-back, yeah, as well. We did it 2 years in a row.
Back-to-back.
God, must be.
Must be. So that is where we are with the squad right now. I think Aaron has mentioned two of the 4D that are still not re-signed as players he'd like to see back in Tyson Strachan and Gleeson Fournier, and you know, sort of fully agree with that. And I sort of resigned myself with Tyson Strachan, and I put him in the category with Hotham and Bounds that I just decided that we wouldn't see any of them in a shirt again. So we've got one back, so I was wrong there. So I'd love to be proven wrong again.
Two out of three ain't bad.
Two
out of three ain't bad.
It would be very, very nice. yeah, obviously he was a sort of massive part of turning the season around after an initial wobble. And yeah, be great to see a player of, you know, his composure and calmness back in the team. In terms of the forwards, there's still quite a lot. I'll just sort of rattle the names off quickly. Lionel Michel, Mentivoglio, Patrick Aston, Paul Crowley, Justin Farina, Jake Morissette, who we mentioned. And then in terms of Brits, there's Matthew Myers, Josh Batch, Luke Piggott, who we've mentioned, and Tom Zrutkis. Sean, out of the forwards, if you could pick one or two that 100% you want to see back next season, who's right at the top of the list for you?
Are we talking import or Brits?
I think it's probably a given that we want the Brits back. So if we go in,
okay. I'm gonna say Bentivoglio. I thought last year he was unbelievable. I thought he was a totally different player to the first year. He was just awesome. Is it again big game player? We keep talking about these big game players. He was one of them. Just loved to play the game. Unbelievable to watch. Did a bit of everything. Good skater. And the other one is, you normally when you take Bentivoglio, you expect to take Ulmer as well. But I'm going to go with Justin Farina. I thought Farina brought what we've missed for a long time. We found a player who can play his heart out, plays a gritty game. But the guy scored big goals for us, and he wasn't afraid to throw them either. Probably one of my favourite fights of the last couple of years is Justin Farina against Matteo Gagnon up in Nottingham. That tilt is one of the best fights I've seen in such a long time.
It was in Cardiff, the good one, wasn't it?
No, there was the one in Nottingham where we went 4-0 down, and Farina stood up and they were just rock and sock and continuing.
They had to be the rock and sock. I mean, Cardiff as well. So
yeah,
the meddled in my head.
Farina went to the box and sort of threw his arms up, and that was the game we nearly came back and won, if you remember. We nearly came back and won it. So that, you know, we haven't had a player that injected that spark in with his fighting ability, but had the ability to, you know, change the game himself as well. He had a 4-goal game against Nottingham at home, wasn't afraid to throw pucks on the net, scored a big goal in the Sheffield semi-final. I think his goal to points ratio is one of the weirdest I've ever seen. And I think he just brought the whole package. I feel like he could play in the top six if he needed to, play power play, kill. But if not, was a perfect, you know, spark player, would go out there and batter bodies. Scored in 50 Elite League games, scored 25 goals. I know he's quite bunchy, but overall, I thought he brought a bit of everything. And I just loved his game. We haven't had a player like that since Derek Campbell. And that was a short-lived spell. And so that's what I thought about Justin Farina and why I would love to see him come back.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. You have a massive number of goals as well, and really connected with the crowd as well. Always helps if there's a champ that catches on. Be ashamed to waste that. Aaron, anyone else on your part? So on top of those?
I wonder.
Mr. Ulmer might get a mention.
It's kind of obvious, isn't it? Yeah, Alma, 37 years old, fourth in our team for point scoring, racked up the goals. You know, he was important. He only took 28 penalty minutes, which, you know, that's always a good stat. You know, not taking a lot of penalties, but scoring goals is usually helpful. But I think for me, you know, we've already cemented Joey Martin, Pope, Haddad as forwards. I'd like to see Bentivoglio back. I think he was phenomenal. I agree with Sean on Justin Farina. And if we can keep playing on it just for me personally, then I'm not really that fussed about the rest. I was never a big Paul Crowder fan. Patrick Aslin, first year, he was fantastic. Second year, he was poor first start of the year, and he did start to get a bit better, but I wouldn't miss him. Jake Morissette, he was Mr. Captain in the last 2 years, fantastic player, but he never stood out on my radar. But if he has a year like he did last year, he's more than welcome to. He's
unbelievable.
I thought he was fantastic. You know, he done everything right. And talking about penalty minutes, just looking at his stats now, he took 8 penalty minutes all year after scoring 17 goals and 27 assists. So, How is that not a brilliant player for you? Like, and also 5 points in the playoffs as well.
But I hope that for the first time in a few years that
Morissette comes back.
There's a clamour for Morissette to come back, yeah, rather than everyone saying, "Oh well, I suppose if he comes back, it's all right."
Yeah.
Which it seems to have been that pretty much since his first season in the terrible year before Todd, where I thought he was one of the standouts. Every year there's been like I suppose it's not too bad, yeah, he's coming back. But I think every year he treats people wrong as well.
I'll say it, I've said it every off season that I wouldn't be disappointed to see Morissette back, but wouldn't be disappointed to see him go. This year I really want to see him come back because he continuously, you know, like I said, those couple of years he was still a good player. You know, he didn't do anything wrong, but I always felt he was a player we could upgrade on. But last year he was unbelievable. He had an absolutely unreal year.
I thought he did as well.
Would agree with that. You know, I'd really like to see Leinola come back. I haven't got the obsession that Aaron has, so a bit more of an unbiased view. And as Aaron said, that leaves Paul Crowder and Patrick Astling. And you know, if you think the Brits coming back, that would only be a turnover of two import forwards, which you would expect to see at least that to make sure that we keep improving. So. And you know, as I said, if we did run a spare, then there could be a space if we went 60. As I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Morissette took an assistant coaching role and maybe stood on the bench from time to time. But that's a question itself, Sean. If we were to re-sign everyone that we've just said we'd like to see back, and that the only turnover in the forward core was Aston and Crowder, which is our choice, not a prediction, but do you think that's enough of a change in a title-winning team? Would you be happy with just changing two?
No, I wouldn't. Just in a straight-up answer to your question, I think that you know, we didn't see many forward changes from the year before as well. I think even one of the forward changes we did see was forced upon us with the retirement of Chris Culligan. And I really like Crowder. I thought he had the ability to play on the top six. When he had injury troubles, he produced. You know, but you do have to keep improving. You do. And if we only turn over two of those players, I think we need one more. I genuinely do. And that's why, like I just said, I really want Morissette to come back. But now we talk about that turnover, and out of those players that I would rather see not come back, Morissette sits bottom of that list again. You know, of who's left, the imports. And I feel like if the club are going to go in that direction, and Morissette's the type of player who, even when he was injured with I think it was his knee last year or the year before, he kept himself fit constantly, and he was on the bench with us, and he was a massive asset to us. And I feel like he's the perfect spare. If you know what I mean, he's a club guy. He's probably looking to get into coaching at some stage of his career anyway. So is it such a bad thing for him to keep himself in shape on a regular basis, out on the ice with the guys every game, but ready to jump in when we need him? And I feel like three changes with the replacements for Aslan, Crowder and Morissette, with Morissette as the spare on the bench, that is something which I could, I think that's the perfect way to go about it. That ingests enough change into the team and still gives you that option with a guy like Morissette, who's just been clutch, like I said, last year particularly. He's not the sort of player where he's playing on your top six, scoring. He's not playing all your power play minutes, scoring big goals every other game. You know, his points suggest he does score almost every other game, but he's still a bottom six forward. So that's the kind of guy you want to be running spare, because you don't have to keep him, you know, keep his eye in, keep him playing to keep him producing. So that's the way I would go about it. We need three changes in the forwards, and those are the three forwards I would change. Sorry, Mo.
I think it makes sense, and I think it might be like that at the start of the season. I don't think it would stay like that. I think Morissette would force his way into the lineup and push someone else out, or force Gould to go on a general rotation. And I think that's another thing where, you know, the positive of having a guy like that with that mindset, that he wouldn't be happy to be on the bench. He'd do it, he'd do it well, but I would see him sort of pushing himself straight back in to the lineup quite quickly if that did happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how the recruitment goes. Steve King, while we've been on air, has actually posted online saying that there's not a mass exodus of players. There will be more leaving than has been announced, which, yeah, with only two going, you would more than expect, but that it's just going to be a steady turnover. So you'd imagine four or five, as it has been for the last, well, pretty much consistently, under Andrew Lord. So that's the squad. Just looking ahead, the pre-season fixtures, there's been six games announced. Home and away series against league rivals Nottingham Panthers, Coventry Blaze, and a home doubleheader against HK Poprad, which I think I meant to write down. Slovakian team, the same as...
It was Banska Bystrica, yeah.
That I realised I couldn't say their name just as I went into that sentence. So thank you for bailing me out.
No problem at all. That's what friends are for.
Exactly. When I find some, I'll let them know that's what they need to do. So we played Nottingham at home now, I think the last... Definitely this last season. You know, it's going to be a good test. You know, they're always a top team. Hopefully, they'll have some players in, and like this season where we played half a squad, which probably wasn't the test we were looking for. Great to see a foreign team. But my initial thoughts, and I don't know about you, Aaron, I was disappointed to see Coventry back in the pre-season schedule. What were your thoughts on it?
To be honest, same, really. I think they don't... Well, I can't say they don't offer us nothing because, you know, it's going to be a Danny Stewart team, so it's not going to be a great team. But I'm not expecting a lot from them. I think we need a little bit more stiffer competition to prepare us for the league. You know, I think the league going to 3-3 now, 3 home, 3 away?
Big change.
Yeah, so I think with the new fixture change, we may see Coventry a little bit more. See a little bit more of them, but I think we know what to expect. But if you think about it, you know, the games we played against them last year, they were entertaining games. The oldies love playing against Coventry. They still see it as a rivalry. So maybe like Todd is thinking, you know, a couple more bums on seats for tickets, a little bit more revenue for the club. So I can see that. And plus, they're only down the road, even though
travel is a big thing, and and like you say, and hopefully it'll generate a few more away ticket sales. You may be thinking as well.
Yeah. So
obviously, the fixtures, I think the preseason ones were all out before the preseason the CHL schedule. And the Devils' first game being the Thursday following that weekend. Do you think there may be something in it, Sean, that we've maybe chosen a lesser team, if you like, to play against on the weekend when there's not a full week's recovery time to the start of our CHL?
Yeah, I can see that. And you also have to look at it. The last couple of years, we've had some very, very good European pre-season teams. And, you know, I would say that every year Coventry brought a bigger gate than all of those European teams. Correct me if I'm wrong, but at a glance, I would say that the Coventry games have been better attended than those, and it costs more to bring those teams in. I think it's a good move to bring Coventry back, especially as Aaron said, you know, the league format, which we'll touch on shortly, will mean that we see them a bit more than last year. But as in past years, was, you know, we probably played Coventry what 8 times a year.
That was just in the league. We then play them twice in the Challenge Cup, twice in pre-season.
So you're talking about 12 games, maybe even a cup quarter-final.
The year when we had them in the cup quarter-final in pre-season, we played them 14 times. 15, because I think we had them in the playoffs in Nottingham as well. So I'm sure we had 15 games against Coventry in a season 1 year. So, we shouldn't end up in that situation, at least.
Hey, I don't mind if they're league games, cup games or anything. We know we can beat Coventry, so give me all the Coventry games.
Fair enough. We've not talked about HK Propad. I'm going to guess that neither of you are an expert on them or the league. So we'll move in swiftly on to the CHL. And so Andrew Lord was one of the draw masters, and resulted in us getting Red Bull Salzburg from Austria, SC Bern from Switzerland, who Nottingham played and finished above in the group last year, and Vekwa Lakers, who obviously we had in our group last year, finalists to the CHL as well, but we did beat them on aggregate.
We did.
I think it's an interesting group. So back to Switzerland again, for those that are going back to Sweden, and a chance for anyone on the, traveling to visit Austria. So, you know, nice to go to new places, with the first two teams anyway. Sean, what were your thoughts on the draw? And, you know, does the fact that Nottingham finished above Bern last year give you hope, or do you think maybe they'll have wised up that the Elite League aren't the whipping boys that we were a few years back?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to look at it. The Nottingham pushed the bar last year because I think teams took them lightly. And because teams took them lightly, they won't take us lightly this year. Bern is, I think, the highest attended club in Europe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's the highest
attendance. I know it's the biggest attendance, and I think they fill it quite regularly, so it makes sense. Highest capacity, sorry.
I'm fairly certain they are one of those teams. I was pleased with the draw overall. It's two new places for a start. Vekwa, you know, was a bit of a, you know, anti-climax that I enjoyed last year, but, you know, it just means you have to go away, you know, and think rethink travel arrangements to do it differently. But it's a club we know well. It's two coaches that know each other very well over the last 2 years. Salzburg is a place which I've always wanted to go, so that was Austria was high on my list. If we couldn't get Salzburg, I was gonna, you know, you were hoping for another one of those teams. And yeah, I was pleased with the draw on balance. And it's always handy to, if you've got people you know from other teams as well. Bern is somewhere they've been; they know it. You know, they know it well, and it's good to get recommendations. So you're not totally blind to it, if you know what I mean. And that, I think that helps. And it turned out to be a pretty nice travel arrangement as well, to be quite honest with you. So
obviously they're places that aren't totally remote like we had last year with Liberec and
Davos,
that was it, where it was almost impossible to get flights in, and you know, connecting trains hardly ran. So yeah, there's a lot more options this year for people traveling. And I believe first Salzburg, there's over 160 people have already reserved tickets, so definitely a few Devils going on tour this year, so that'll be good. Aaron, what are your thoughts on it? I know last year before the group stage you were quite confident, you felt that we had a chance of getting out, and you know, with two victories your prediction was the most accurate out of the three of us. So
I think we're going to be, last year the first game, you know, we lost like 10-1, and I think that was testament to the team. I don't think we knew what we was letting ourselves in for. I think we knew they were strong competition, but not. We tried to play Cardiff Devils hockey, and you know, they were better at that than us. So, you know, the next couple of games we had to switch up a little bit, and coming towards the end of the competition, we looked like we belonged. You know, we beat, like you said, the Vekwa, the finalists. We beat them convincingly, and we didn't struggle against them when they come down to our ground. So hopefully we'll be a little bit more prepared. I know you guys weren't, like, when the fixtures got announced, pardon me, that you guys weren't happy about having the home game first. But I think I see it as a good thing. I think, you know, the players get to play in front of their home fans, you know, so that gives them a little bit more of an edge. You know, they want to perform first game in the competition. You know, Lord only knows what to expect. A couple of players will too. So I think that benefits us massively. So I think as long as we can start where we finished off last year, there's no reason why we can't do what Panthers did and get up the group stages. All right, I don't see us going much past further than that, but group stages is definitely 100% achievable, and yeah, why not? And why not try and go one more step than what Panthers did? If they can do it, so can we. You know, where did Panthers finish in the league last year? A lot lower than us, and we beat them quite regularly. So if they can do it, why can't we? If we just need to turn up and, you know. get games under our belt. I want the preseason to start a lot earlier than it did, so we become more accustomed to each other and stuff like that, but it's all cost. And, you know, I'm not a coach and I don't have money to fund it, so.
I missed a bit of Aaron optimism. Just one very quick, you said about sort of being disappointed that we were playing home first. I think for myself and Sean, we were both not sure if we could travel if it was the way round it was announced. So it was purely for selfish reasons that I wanted to be away the first week. As it turned out, plans got changed. So I can go anyway. So I don't actually care either way. And I think on balance, it is probably better that we're home first. You mentioned the fact that we're obviously not going to have anywhere near as much preparation as these massive leagues do. But at least we're not going to spend 2 days traveling. To get to a game, it'll be a couple more days after the Coventry, in the rink, on the ice, video work with our gyms, to get those two CHL games under our belts. So I think, you know, it's a really good idea from the club, and shows that they are serious about getting through to push for the games to be that way around.
Yeah, sorry, Sean. I think the one thing to note on last year is that, yeah, we started slowly, but we still won two games. We won two of our three games at home, and I missed the Liberec game, but you know we should have had an extra point from the Davos game. You know, regulation, that was a bit of a, you know, that we could have had an extra point there. And you look at that game we lost in Liberec, we went up 2-0, and we were right up there with them. And but for the speed of Davos 2 days previous, we might have had the gas to keep going, and I think you're right that this shows that the club is serious about wanting to progress. They're three very, very good teams, as you'd expect from any of the groups. But why you know what? Why not us? If you think we won that game in, and it's all ifs and buts and what ifs, and obviously we didn't, but if we got those 2 points there in Liberec last year, another extra point against Davos with three extra points have seen us through. You know, I don't have the table in front of me, but
you may have been close.
And we would have been close. And, you know, if you think last year, if we put those games first at home where we don't have the travel, could we have done it? Who knows? But let's not worry about last year. Let's go and do it this year. I'm with Aaron. Why not us?
Aaron, it's rubbing off. Mr. Optimism is spreading through the podcast like wildfire.
What about you, yeah, Paul?
I don't think so. I think mainly because of, you know, the point that I think we've touched on, that British ice hockey isn't an unknown quantity in the CHL anymore. Thanks, Nottingham. But, you know, adding to it, you know, we won two games as well. Pushed Liberec close. We pushed Vekwa close in Vekwa as well. Yeah, you know, that was not a comfortable win for them. So, you know, there's very, you know, no one's going to be looking at us thinking, oh, it's a walk in the park. They're also not going to be scared of us, let's be honest. But, you know, that chance of being underestimated probably isn't there now.
And GB's back-to-back home belts as well. I know it's...
Yeah, you know, hockey in Britain is actually featuring on the map. You know, a lot of European hockey fans could probably tell you that we've got a league now, which is a massive step on a few years ago. But still, why not? And, you know, we've discussed that it doesn't look like there's going to be a massive turnover of players. And they're the guys that did it last year, as Aaron said, and they'll know what to expect. They won't need as much time to click to get going, so the shorter pre-season maybe won't be such an impact. Who knows? But yeah, this exciting times. It's just a great competition to be a part of, and just excited to do it again.
Pipe.
Were they words, or were you just making noises?
No, hype. The hype is real.
I just heard you making hype noises, and I just heard noise. Finish CHL, and then, not finish CHL, once we've got the first four games out of the way, we'll obviously move into the league. And still some questions around how it's all going to look. Obviously, the news that Edinburgh Capitals have left after... Who would have thought that it wasn't them folding or being kicked out of the league? It was losing an ice contract with their own ice rink because, you know, another team, Merrifield Racers, came in and took the contract. I think it was interesting to hear Neil Francis talk about that at Mega Monday and saying that the league almost didn't have an option but to reject, whilst there's been a lot of complaints about it. Just made the good point that what if someone buys the name Nottingham Lions and goes and makes more makes a bigger offer for ice time rental at Nottingham Arena, and Nottingham Panthers are out of the league, and you almost open the door for people to force their way into the league. So the way it was done, I think it was the right decision. And obviously everyone wants to see hockey in Edinburgh back, but competitive. So it's 11 teams. We've already said it'll be three home, three away against everyone, which is great. No more like, what's the word, sort of manipulated tables. But obviously we don't know what the Challenge Cup's going to look like. Sean, what would your solution be? Just a group of 11, top eight go through, or do you think the league will do something weird and wonderful with the conference type system?
I don't really know. I think with, you know, the Challenge Cup was really the competition which, I hate the whole round robin. I hate the mini groups thing to, you know, what was it last year? I think it was the top two from each, wasn't it, or something like that?
And then two of the runners up, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, what is the point? I know you're making fixtures. Basically, you're there just to fill fixtures. And now with these extra games in the league, you need those fixtures. I think it's also there for, this sounds so derogatory because we were one of these teams once, but one of the lesser teams to win a trophy. You know, that's what it's there for. They don't expect the challenge for the league title. But with conference in now and everyone making a big deal of their conferences, you know, even we're raising conference banners now. You know, the conferences are still in place in a way so that, you know, people can still win their conference, and that is a big deal to teams. So do you really need that competition there? You know, the fixture, to fill the void in fixtures is one thing, and, you know, to press some teams on is another. And I think the Challenge Cup in its format the last couple of years is the worst it's ever been. It's just lost almost all of its integrity. The only thing that gained it any integrity was that Nottingham weren't allowed to double up their fixtures anymore, which was great. But it's lost any of its appeal that it did in its former days. And I don't see how you can keep it as it was last year without absolutely crippling your season, but to be quite honest with you. And the league also have to, I know it's not the league's responsibility, but they have to factor in that GB are going to be on pretty intense duty this year, I'd like to think, with Pool A coming up. So they don't want the season going to be dragged out. You don't really want the season going past mid-April anyway. So that's a lot of hockey for teams to play in the middle. And I just don't think you need it anymore. It's nice to have...
You advocate and get rid of it altogether, or...?
I wouldn't be upset to see it go. It's a competition which is near to my heart, and it's the first trophy I watched us win, and it's the one I've seen watched us win most, but I just don't see the need for it anymore. It doesn't need to fill fixture voids. Teams don't need to have something to challenge for. To me, it doesn't offer anything anymore. And with Belfast last year and the Challenge Cup final being an issue, with ticketing, this, that, and the other, do the league want the hassle of it anymore? I just don't see it being worth it, to be honest with you.
That wasn't the response I was expecting.
Really?
With it.
Really?
Yeah, no. I totally agree with the whole, I think everyone played six games to drop four teams out of 12 out of a competition. Totally ridiculous. Just to get another round in. But I thought you were going to suggest a more streamlined, like, group stage. You know, 11 top four or top eight go into knockouts, or somehow format it into a straight knockout. So that was quite surprising. Aaron, are you advocating get rid of it as well? I think same as Sean and myself. It's the first trophy you saw the Devils win, obviously in a different year, but you know, it is a trophy that's special to the Devils fans, probably more than...
Yeah, it's very, very dear to my heart, and I love the competition. I think... although we've been in the final for the last 4 years, I think it is.
Yeah.
And mainly like the bigger teams who won it. I think it's a competition where the smaller teams can think, right, you know, like, we are not going to be able, like, after the first couple of weeks, we are not going to be able to compete with the Devils, Panthers, Sheffield, Giants. Let's play for something else. Let's play for the Challenge Cup. You know, get to the next stage, get to the next stage. You know, it's a good competition for the, not like this, well, they are the smaller clubs to win a trophy. And I think it's key because I think, you know, I think for, even for fan bases, I think if you're playing for one league title or a playoff at the end of the year, you were losing every other game or two games in four or wherever, then it's not really entertaining to watch when you're gonna get, you know, beat 4 or 5-0 every week and stuff like that. It's not fun to watch. But when you can get through to the next round of the competition and, you know, it gives you something to celebrate, then I think that's really important for fans, and it's something that they need to see every week, because, like, if you haven't got nothing to cheer, then, you know, you're going to start losing bums on seats and you're going to start losing revenue, and it's not going to be fun for the players anymore and stuff like that. So I think a competition like the Challenge Cup is absolutely key. I don't think we should get rid of it at all. Maybe look at restructuring it and, like, you know, like you said, Paul, maybe have like a league table and for like maybe up until Christmas, play each other like once or twice or wherever up until Christmas. And then the top four goes into the semi-finals and then a finals. Do you know what I mean? Or something that's just off the top of my head.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to, and so a question that popped into my head for Sean. So sorry to interrupt. The league's the same, but this happened during the Reagan years, if you like, or pretty much.
I knew you were going to say that.
All of our time as hockey fans up until Todd Kellman, would you be saying what you're saying now, or are you just saying this because we're a big club.
I knew it was coming, but I think let's not forget that most of the time under Todd Kellman and the new regime has been, the majority of time with conferences has been under this regime, and I just feel like the conferences look how seriously the other conferences take their titles. You look at Manchester; they were so proud of winning it. Fife for winning their conference. I see that as being their title.
If you look at our conference and the one that, if you look at our conference, you've got all the big teams playing in it, and I don't, like, other teams don't look at the conference like we're celebrating it. All right,
I think they really have to.
Only the small, like, but what I'm saying is, like, the three big trophies you got are the playoffs, the Elite League, and the Challenge Cup. I'd say anyone from top three or top four, like, the only teams that are going to win them trophies are Belfast, Nottingham, Sheffield, and us. That's the only four teams that are going to win two of those trophies. The playoffs are a bit unusual, and you might get, like, the likes of Fife to do it or something like that. But the Challenge Cup gives a team, like, put it this way, like, all right, it runs a little bit too long now. Going into mid-February, early March, that's way too long for the competition. It should be done beginning of January, like, latest. So, like, if you think, like, a smaller team who's not whose sole will is to win that cup, that gives them an edge then to think, right, we can do this. Let's do this. Let's finish out the rest of the year strong. Make playoffs and go for a run there. I think with the conference, it's just you're not playing for anything. There's no, like, it's just basically a league title, but for four teams. You know what I mean?
Three teams if you're in Scotland this year.
Exactly.
I think the conference titles being there and staying there is really good. And I think, as Sean said, it gives all the league games that could become meaningless if you're safe in the playoffs and can't challenge. Now that there's more games that matter because all those conference games are going to keep counting. Are the conferences going to take just points in conference? I didn't see the. I can't remember what the announcement said. If either of you can remember.
All the games you'll play against conference teams will go to points.
So you know, they'll be important games running through the season. But
Paul, just a quick one I want to put to you now, though, while we're having this debate, it's a good one to have. The last small team, or the last smaller team, to win the Challenge Cup was Proteas in 2006. And if clubs took it that seriously, why has a team not won it in that time since 13 years on? Why is a small club, if it's that important, why, you know, when was the last time a small team made the final? Other than, you know, Manchester and Belfast. I just don't.
Is that not the argument, though, that teams do take it seriously? So the little teams do go for it, but your Cardiffs, your Belfasts, or Cardiff now, obviously not through the whole run that you're talking, but your Belfast, your Sheffields, your Nottinghams still take it seriously. They still want to win it just as much. And yeah, the nature of the beast is that smaller teams aren't going to win as much. You know, like the playoffs, Coventry won it 4 years ago, you know, completely unexpected, and probably Newcastle before that, though they did finish second or third in the league that year. So it's the trophies aren't going to be won by other teams, but Guildford got a quarter final against Cardiff. It was another sellout crowd for them at home. Well, not sellout, but it was another good crowd for them at home. It's a big game, especially in their first season. The draw falls right, you could end up with Guildford against Fife in a quarter final. So they make it to the semi final. It's big games. It's excitement. You know, it's much smaller scale, but you know, and it's not on the same. And it's not meant to sound belittling, but you think when small teams in football get a cup run in the FA Cup, they're never going to win the FA Cup. Occasionally, like you get like a Cardiff City to get in the final. Wigan won it, and however it goes, but it's the run. It's those couple of games, those big games that you don't see as much when you're a club like we were 4 years ago. And I think to take that away for the sake of what should only be a few fixtures, and now we're at a 60-game league season, I think it will. I wouldn't even care if we got down to the final eight by doubling up on to the first league fixture of everyone you play home and away. Camps in a separate little league table. Top eight goes into a knockout. Just there's no extra games until you get to the quarterfinals, and then that's what, an extra five games for the two teams that make the final. And it's a trophy that still means something. You've played some. You've finished the top eight in a group of all the league. You're right at the start of the year. Anyone can do that this year. We haven't. You know, I would imagine all teams would be confident of finishing the top eight, and then some knockout games which would be quite big. I just think to lose it, and selfishly, we've been in the final 4 years and I've loved every one of them. I've not loved the results of two of them, but every one of those days has been fantastic, whether they were in Sheffield or they were in Cardiff. They've been like some of my favourite days watching ice hockey. A cup final is something special, and playoffs is different. It's not a proper cup final because you've got the whole weekend. We've gone to a one-off cup final, and I just think it's made the tournament feel more important because of that, whether that's because we hosted the final. But I don't know. I just think it feels more relevant to me over the last 4 years with the one-off final that everyone looks at. God, we were in a two-legged final against Nottingham in 2011, I think.
Sounds about right, yeah.
I couldn't tell you a thing about those games. Yeah. I'd forgotten what you were doing. You mentioned it a couple of years ago on a podcast, and I had no idea that even happened. But you mark my words, in 10 years' time, I won't even forget that we were in that boring as hell 0-0 one against Nottingham, because it was a one-off. I went to Sheffield, it was a day out. That Belfast one, I'm not going to forget that. And I don't know, I just think... I think it matters to everyone. I think Sheffield fans, because they haven't won it since the first elite season, want to tell you it doesn't matter. Yeah. Mm. And Nottingham won it back. Nottingham, well, Corey Nielsen kept a job because of that trophy for a couple of years.
And a nicer trophy. Still there.
Yeah, they've still got that nice. Now he's gone, we should go and get it, the league should get it back.
Yeah. I'd care about it if we got that trophy back, actually.
Though this year's is pretty nice. We should swap it for the Aladdin Cup, though, which is still the nicest trophy we've won in a while. We have talked for absolutely ages.
Before you start, Paul, I just want to...
I was going to finish, if that's all right.
It's not about the Challenge Cup. It's not about hockey, really. But I think that was the first time in possibly our friendship, but definitely the podcast, that you've ever agreed with me. So let's take a moment and appreciate that.
Let's have a moment.
Thank you.
I think I agreed with you earlier in the podcast a couple of times as well. It's gonna be weird.
But you normally, you know, you and Sean are usually like joint at the hip and so anything either of you say, you both like
say things to us.
So on the wild note that I've agreed with Aaron, thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, it shows just how desperate we all are for ice hockey. If you do manage to listen to this on Tuesday, it's going to be very close, even if it's published in time. But it is 2 months today until our first home game against Nottingham. So we're getting there, guys. We're getting there. We'll definitely do a podcast before that weekend. If there's enough signings, a bit before we might do another off-season one, but if not, we'll be into the season. Keep in contact. Let us know what you think about the players that we've talked about coming back, not coming back, how you think we're going to get on with CHL, and your thoughts on the Challenge Cup. Like seeing people's thoughts and having a debate on Twitter during the off-season. It just makes it all go a little bit quicker. So thank you from Sean, Aaron, and myself for listening. And for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devon inside, the Devon inside. Every single one of us, the Devon inside.